20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of a Pack-A-Day Podcast, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Thank you so much for making us part of your day. My name is Nick Schmitz, and I will be your host for today. And here we sit, the Wednesday after championship weekend, and, well, it was a good season, far surpassing expectations for the Packers. 14 total wins, 4 total losses, 2 of them, unfortunately, to the 49ers, who will now be representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. Not a whole lot to say at this point. If you've been listening to this podcast, I'm sure everybody has covered every pretty much last bit of the NFC Championship game. So no rehash there, but just know that where this team was for the last 2 years to where they finished this year, yeah, it's a disappointing falling short, especially coming so close, it is, but it's a great building block for the fourth youngest team, I believe, in the NFL right now, and a Hall of Fame quarterback and a rookie head coach to have their first taste of success be the NFC Championship game. I think most teams would call that a successful first year of a new coaching staff. So be proud of that. Be happy. They could be a whole hell of a lot further away than where they are right now. So it was a great season, disappointing end to it nonetheless. But remember, when the NFL season ends in 2 weeks, about a week and a half now, let's be realistic about it. There's going to be 31 teams that are going to end the season in what they consider a very disappointing fashion. So there can only be one. Unfortunately, this year it was not Green Bay. But like I said, great building block from here on out. So with that, I'm going to bring in the rest of the crew here, Maggie and Jacob. And guys, I know it wasn't the way we wanted the season to end, but like we've talked about so many times, specifically on our show, that, you know, this was far surpassing expectations, and it's nice to see that, you know, first year I didn't have many expectations for Matt LaFleur and the coaching staff. You know, it far surpassed expectations, but I know you guys have enjoyed the ride this far, and so we're going to start some of the off-season talk now. Yes, the season, the NFL season as a whole, still got the Super Bowl to go. I know even though the Packers are not in it, I am going to watch it. I'm going to enjoy it. I love watching the Super Bowl. It's one of my favorite sporting events to watch, even if the Packers aren't playing in it. But we're going to kind of get a jump start right now on Green Bay's offseason. So, Maggie, Jacob, we're going to be looking at the biggest needs for this team in the offseason. And we talked before we started here what we think the three biggest team needs are going into the offseason. We didn't share with each other because Maggie was interested to know if we all have the same kind of thought process on what are some of the biggest needs for the Packers this offseason. So, Maggie, I'm going to start there with you. What do you think the three biggest needs are for this team heading into the offseason?
So my three, in no particular order, are wide receiver, defensive line, inside linebacker.
All right, and Jacob, are you in agreement with that, or are you looking elsewhere for a need with this team?
Defensive line to me is number one. Linebacker is two, and receiver is three. I will say this though: if Brian Bulaga is not retained, offensive line I think goes to the top of the list. I think that, and my reasoning behind that is, I think you've seen, and we kind of talked about it, if you look at Green Bay's losses in the postseason, the Seattle game doesn't really count from a few years ago, and the Atlanta game not as much either. But a lot of their postseason losses, and Sunday was no exception, was getting run off the field in the trenches on both sides of the ball. And when Green Bay won the Super Bowl, they were dominant up front on both sides. They had a very good pass-blocking unit in 2010. They had a disruptive defensive line in front four. Now I think they have a good start to a front with the Smith brothers and Kenny Clark, but they need some other guys that can kind of make some plays there. With all due respect to Dean Lowry, I don't think he's a high level starter. I think he's a, you know, a good second tier rotational type player. And I think that your offensive line, I kind of made this joke earlier, I had somebody tell me today, well, like, you know, they're good, they're okay, they're fine on their offensive line or whatever like that. Well, as Aaron Rodgers gets older, you really don't want to settle for fine up front, and especially against some of these teams. You're going to face some vicious pass rushes going to the Super Bowl. Those are the teams that – that's one of the reasons that teams like that are there. They're really good at rushing the quarterback. So that's what that's going to be. You know, I think receiver is going to be the one that a lot of people are looking at all year long, but I really think that you've seen – Alan Lazard is a functional player, a good player. Davante Adams is obviously Davante Adams. There isn't an Alan Lazard on the defensive line. There isn't an Alan Lazard at linebacker. So that's why I think this needs to take precedence. And there isn't an Alan Lazard at offensive tackle if Bulaga leaves either. So, you know, I think that that's an interesting discussion. I'm not saying they don't need those, but I definitely think that your trenches are definitely big needs, and they're going to be every year.
Well, Maggie, to answer your question, to see if all three of us were on the same page, the answer is yes, we are all on the same page here, at least amongst the three of us. Yes, I was going to say wide receiver, inside linebacker, and defensive line. Now, Jacob, you gave a specific order in which you feel is the, you know, prioritizing. At this point, you know, I agree that all three of those are needs. I don't necessarily know if I have an idea yet as to which one needs to be addressed first, second, and third. But, you know, Maggie, as we look forward to this offseason, you know, you look at the defensive line right now, it's Kenny Clark, and that seems to kind of be it. There's a lot of questions as to whether or not Blake Martinez is going to be retained next year. There's lots of belief on both ends there that, yes, he will be back. No, he won't be. He'll be too expensive. And then, obviously, Jacob, as you pointed out, right now it seems like the wide receiver room is Davante Adams and then Alan Lazard, and that's kind of about it. So, Maggie, you know, what are your thoughts on Blake Martinez? Is he going to be back? Are they going to be looking for someone in the draft? How do they fill that hole at linebacker?
Yeah, so the Blake Martinez thing is really tricky to me just because I don't necessarily know if I think he'll be back. I think given the camaraderie of this team and how, you know, tight-knit the team was in general, I think that he could come back for a maybe more team-friendly price. But I also think that if it's an astronomical difference between his market value in Green Bay versus what he would get on the open market, then I don't see him being willing to come back, and I wouldn't necessarily blame him. But I think it's also kind of interesting that the Packers have invested draft capital at inside linebacker for a couple of seasons now, with Oren Burks as high as a third rounder and Ty Summers as a seventh rounder, and neither one of these guys has really seen the field. And when you're looking for athletic, explosive linebackers, those are two guys that do that, that have been relegated to special teams. So I don't know if they would expect either of those two guys to make a jump, but I would also think that if they were looking at them as potential starters at inside linebacker, they would have had an opportunity to try that already, at least in some sub packages. So that's, I guess, the interesting part of inside linebacker to me is, you know, how this defense either will have to work around Blake Martinez, because if he comes back, he's obviously the Mike, and he's obviously an every down inside linebacker, or if they'll go a different route and bring speed to that middle of the field.
Well, and, you know, and then the other question then becomes is, you know, I know a lot of what everybody's looking at, Maggie, is, you know, Aaron Rodgers isn't getting any younger. He turned, what, 36, 37 this year? You know, he's getting up there in age. One of the big things, as Jacob pointed out, is as Aaron Rodgers gets older, he's not going to be as mobile. And even to a certain extent, we've already kind of seen the deterioration of Aaron Rodgers and his ability to move. He can still move, but it's certainly not like it was even just a couple of years ago. And so, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers, he's up there in age. So the reality is you have to start wondering, you know, how many years of good football does he have left, and how many years do you have to devote to drafting and developing, you know, these players? So, Maggie, the next question then becomes is when we start looking at these needs throughout the team, obviously, yes, some, if not most of the answer is just the reality of the league is, and a salary cap, is that you're going to do most of this through the draft. But, you know, they had big free agent signings last year with Preston and Za'Darius Smith, who were awesome this past season. You had Adrian Amos, who you added in the defensive back. And so the question becomes is, do you see Green Bay addressing any of these potential issues through free agency in this offseason? And if so, is there one position that, you know, free agency-wise lends itself well to being filled through free agency instead of the draft?
So I think that that's a really good point, and that is something that I think with this Packers team, having a young defense, especially now that they brought in free agents last season to kind of groom that defense, bring up some of the young starters, like Preston and Za'Darius grooming Rashawn Gary, Adrian Amos grooming Darnell Savage. The defense is pretty set, and I think if they bring in a couple of rookies, that room is pretty solid. I like the idea, like you mentioned, knowing how much time it takes Aaron Rodgers to get acclimated with some receivers and with some of his targets. I think Jay Sternberger is coming along. But I do really like the idea of the Packers looking for a wide receiver or a tight end in free agency that has some NFL experience already. I think we saw that with Mercedes Lewis coming in with Jimmy Graham. They didn't necessarily have playing experience before 2 years ago with Aaron Rodgers, but because there was that veteran understanding of, you know, how to practice, how to be in a locker room, how to kind of be on the same page with the quarterback, it was easier for Rodgers to adjust to them rather than guys like MVS who are having trouble getting on the same page, running those routes with Rodgers, which was also a big problem we saw in 2018. So I do think if the Packers have to address any positions in free agency this season, wide receiver and maybe tight end would be some really good ideas there to get him more experience on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, well, and then, so I guess then the next question becomes is the reality of the draft. You're going to have to fill some of this through the draft. And, you know, I guess one of the things that you really need from draft picks, obviously, is you need to get lots of production from these young players while they are still on rookie contracts. So realistically, you know, you look at Brian Gutekunst's first two drafts. You have Jair Alexander, who has turned into a pretty good player. But it seems like beyond that first draft, there hasn't been a whole lot of production through the rest of the draft class. And obviously, you excuse all the rookies from this past year because it was, you know, their first year in the league. So Elgton Jenkins was great in his rookie year. Darnell Savage was very good. And that was kind of about the extent of the help that you got from the rookie class. But again, like I said, it's their rookie year, so you kind of give them, you know, a pass. But I guess, is there any viability that they can plug and fill these holes in the time allotted that Aaron Rodgers would need in order to, you know, get back to competing for a Super Bowl? And, you know, reality being, you know, what percentage, I'm assuming it's probably 80 to 90% of the holes you're going to have to fill, reality still dictates that you're going to have to do it through the draft, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Packers, realistically, with the cap space they have, especially if Jimmy Graham does end up retiring, which he kind of alluded to on social media, we aren't entirely sure, I guess, as a fan base, what's going on there. But if the Packers do decide to move on from him, that frees up cap space. You look at guys like Lane Taylor. But then you have to consider if they re-sign Mason Crosby, Brian Bulaga. So the cap situation is tricky enough right now with the Packers wanting to retain their own guys at this point that I don't see them spending big money on too many positions. They can maybe go get one or two guys on average-sized contracts, I would say, at this point, unless there's like a surprise cut that takes place. But yeah, I think that this team is going to have to do a lot of the rebuilding and the fine-tuning through the draft, and it's not necessarily easy to do that when you're picking 30th. I don't see Brian Gutekunst trading up at this point. I could be mistaken, of course, but I think that he's in a position now where the roster is close, and he'll just use his picks that he has wisely, maybe trade back even, a la Ted Thompson, to recoup a couple more picks and just really focus on bolstering the roster to see if any of those mid-round gems become kind of the spark that the offense or defense needs to put everything together.
Well, and, you know, you'd mentioned kind of filling some of these needs through, you know, mid-level free agent signings. And so one question that you had brought up, I'm really curious to know your answer. I've got a quick thought on this, but this past offseason, Green Bay let Randall Cobb go. He signed a one-year, $5 million deal with the Dallas Cowboys. So he is now a free agent again, and it is unclear right now, you know, if Dallas will want him back, if they will let him walk. It's unclear what they are going to do with that, but you would broach the question, with the receiver room being what it is right now, is it worth looking at? Is it worth consideration if Randall Cobb is willing to leave Dallas, if Dallas is willing to let him walk? Is it reasonable to think that Gutekunst would consider bringing Randall Cobb back to this team for next year?
I think this is really hard, and I guess I was curious on other takes because I don't think I have like a strong stance. I think I could be easily talked into either side, but the way that I look at it is this. Obviously, the Packers are comfortable letting Randall Cobb go. His production in 2018 had declined throughout the season. He wasn't making that kind of impact we thought that he necessarily could or should make, even with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, even opposite Devontae Adams playing in the slot. He didn't really look like the Randall Cobb that Packers fans were accustomed to seeing in Green Bay, and he wasn't really playing that Aaron Rodgers chemistry game that we were used to. So for that reason, I think the answer would be no. I wouldn't look into bringing him back. Typically, when the GM moves on from someone, it's for a good reason, and I think that they realized his contract was a little high for the production that he was offering. But at the same time, like you said, if the Super Bowl window is a couple of years and that's it, and Randall Cobb is one of Aaron Rodgers' most trusted targets, the idea that maybe you bring him back and still draft a receiver in the second round and get your guy for the future while letting Randall Cobb fill that slot role that's been kind of elusive in Green Bay this season. The argument could be made, yeah, maybe you do bring him back, knowing that it's like a one-year deal again or a two-year deal while you bring up some younger guys, because that chemistry with Rodgers and being on the same page, I think, is still something this offense is missing.
Yeah, you know, and so I think, so the Randall Cobb thing to me is a very interesting discussion point for a lot of reasons. And I think the reality comes down to, I think for me, it really comes down to what are you going to have to pay to get him to come back to Green Bay? Because I think we can all agree that it wouldn't be for a very high price. But, you know, I think part of the reason why I think they let him go in the offseason was he wasn't, like you said, putting up the production that, you know, everybody thought that he would be. And, you know, the salary that he was making was much higher than, you know, again, than what he was producing on the field. And I think that when they let him go, they felt really confident in the young receivers they had in the wide receiver room. And they said, all right, you know, we've got all these younger players who are bigger and faster than Randall Cobb. And I think they felt really good with where they knew it was going to still be a process, but I don't think any of them foresaw the struggles that this receiver room had. And if you need any more proof, think about it like this. Green Bay is unequivalent number two wide receiver in the NFC Championship game was Alan Lazard. They cut him at the end of the preseason and brought him back to the practice squad, which means that the receiver room was so bad outside of Devontae Adams that a guy that they cut at the end of preseason and re-signed to the practice squad worked his way up to the number two spot on the roster. So I would say that it's at least worth attempting, because at this point, Devontae Adams we know will be back next year. And with the way Alan Lazard has played, unless he just has an egregiously awful preseason and training camp, I think he'll be back on the roster. But I think at this point, I really think that Green Bay is kind of resigned to the fact that outside of those two guys, none of the receivers are guaranteed a roster spot. I mean, they cut Jamon Moore 1 year after drafting him. And so Valdez-Scantling, while I'm not saying they're going to cut him, my point is they showed that they would cut Jamon Moore after one season. There's no reason to believe that they would keep him on the roster if he doesn't perform well in the preseason. I think Geronimo Allison has probably been a very big disappointment this season. And Jake Kumerow, as much as everybody in Wisconsin loves him, and as much as Aaron Rodgers has talked him up over the past two seasons, he doesn't throw him the football, so it's not like he's making that much of an impact. I think they're kind of they're going to really not look to start over at the receiver room, but I really think that they're going to keep every option open. And I think if Randall Cobb is willing to come back on a cheap deal, I think it's something that Gutekunst really has to consider going into this offseason. So the other question that I wanted to get at, Maggie, with you is just the receiver room in general. It really was, you know, as I kind of alluded to, it really was a mess this whole season. And I guess we all know that Devontae Adams is great. We all know he's coming back. But, you know, do you feel that any of the other receivers have earned kind of a guaranteed spot come week one of 2020?
I actually said this earlier to someone else, but I think Alan Lazard, like you mentioned, starts the season as wide receiver two, barring any huge free agent signings, if they brought Cobb back, things like that. You know, if they sign a Robbie Anderson is your wide receiver two, but going in right now, even if the Packers draft a wide receiver in the first round, given the chemistry that Alan Lazard has with Aaron Rodgers, I don't expect a rookie wide receiver to start over him. So I think that for sure you've got Adams and Lazard. But then I guess at this point, I'm not really sure. I think what the Packers are probably going to end up doing is seeing what kind of market players like Geronimo Allison have when they test free agency. If Geronimo Allison can come back for $1 million and they just, you know, test him in training camp and see what happens, he could very well be a roster cut on cut down day for the 53. But I think that bringing some of these receivers back, at least for training camp, to see if they can make that leap in a full offseason with the second year in a Matt LaFleur system isn't a terrible idea. I don't think they want to go into the 2020 season with only two wide receivers that have familiarity with Aaron. But I do think that the competition is pretty wide open, and I don't think we can forget Equanimeous St. Brown either, and the impact he can make.
I was just going to ask you about him. That was going to be my next question. Well, and so we bring up Equanimeous St. Brown, and it's interesting because they've already cut they cut, like we said, Jamon Moore. He was the first receiver that they drafted. Valdez-Scantling came into the season as kind of the number two guy on the roster, and he played a career low one snap last Sunday against the 49ers. And then Equanimeous St. Brown, who really kind of came on strong at the end of his rookie season, he missed all of this year with a leg and ankle injury. Where does he fit into this? And, you know, it's kind of unfair to say that, you know, a season loss to injury can hurt him, but given the fact that they've already cut one of the receivers, they're really disappointed in another, does he get any extra consideration as far as how much more time he gets with the Packers based on basically saying that he's had a lost season and he's really coming into just his second year here?
I think that he'll definitely get a little bit more consideration, especially just given the production that he had made his rookie season kind of towards the end of the year. But I don't necessarily think that any of these guys are going to be afforded the opportunity to regress like maybe MVS was this season. You know, I think if there's the opportunity for them to take a step backwards, it's not a luxury that the Packers can afford right now to be developing young receivers to build chemistry with Aaron Rodgers when he's maybe going to play a couple more seasons. You know, and by the time he retires, these guys are looking for massive contracts to go build chemistry with a different quarterback. So I don't know. To me, I guess at this point, I would say that Devontae Adams is just about your only roster lock. It would be really tough to see Alan Lazard not in Green Bay next season. And then outside of that, you know, the rookies are going to take time to develop. I would bet massive amounts of money the Packers draft at least one wide receiver in such a loaded class, if not two. So I think that that right away is like four roster spots, and I wouldn't be surprised if they target a free agency, so five. So I guess it depends how many wide receivers they want to keep on the roster and who they think would be the better developmental prospect between guys like EQ and MVS. It could come down to MVS, Equanimeous, and Jake Kumerow all battling for maybe one roster spot.
Yeah, and, you know, as much as I've been a fan of Kumerow and, you know, love the guy, but I think he's going to be somebody on the outside looking in at the end of training camp this coming season. So, well, with that, a couple of things before we wrap up here. As you may have noticed, Jacob went very quiet during this podcast episode. He had to run off and be with his child. So family, baby always comes first. So, that is why Jacob was absent for most of the podcast. So, and then, Maggie, quickly, the other thing, we didn't talk about this pre-show, but I figured it'd be a good way to end the season. And if I catch you off guard here, I apologize. But one last green and golden for the year. It could be a green and golden for the entire season, and this could be positive, negative, or it could be just with the game this past. Well, you know, let's just keep it to this game, the game this past Sunday. Who gets your green and golden from the NFC Championship game?
I'm giving my green and golden to head coach Matt LaFleur because I feel like he was riding a high of, a franchise record-setting career season in his first year as a head coach, going into Green Bay or going into the NFC Championship game, having just won a playoff game in Green Bay. The mood all week was that this outcome was going to be so different compared to the first showing. It was going to be close. They were going to put their best foot forward. And then they went down 27-0. So while I'm confident that, you know, these are the growing pains that come with a rookie head coach, now his brother and his best friend and, you know, some guys that he's really close to are riding off to the Super Bowl, and he has an entire offseason to think about how he was 60 minutes away from doing the same thing. So because of that, Matt LaFleur gets my puppy for the NFC Championship game and honestly for the whole season, just for the ride that he took Packers fans on. And I think that he far exceeded expectations. So even falling short in a championship game, he still took the Packers to a championship game. And for that, he deserves a puppy.
Absolutely. Well, my green and golden, I have two to give out. I'm just only going to give out one because I don't need the ire of Packer fans. but I'm going to give my green and golden to Mike Pettine and the defense. It was not a great showing. At one point, I think it was into the fourth quarter, Jimmy Garoppolo had thrown the ball six times, and it was because he didn't need to throw the ball. It was not a good game defensively, and you know, sometimes that just happens. Sometimes you run into a team that's just, they're just better than you on that day, and that's okay. As much as it sucks the season ended the way that it did, I don't think there's any shame in saying that the Packers lost on the road to the 49ers for the right to go to the Super Bowl. So, well, before we officially wrap up here, Maggie, very quickly, if people want to get in touch with you, follow your work, how do they do that?
You can follow me on Twitter at Maggie J. Loney. I write for Cheesehead TV, and I can't say anything else about it, but I will have a secret project probably dropping on Twitter sometime in February. So keep an eye out for that secret project and make sure you check it out when it drops.
Secret project. Anything you can give us, or can you not give us anything?
I can't give you anything yet, but nothing if you're not yet? Sick of me already, you will be soon.
All right. Depends on who you're talking to, I guess. I am not in that camp. So, well, Jacob, obviously, like I said, he had to go be with his daughter. But if you want to follow him, you can do so on Twitter at Jacob Westendorf, just his name. He's also works with Packer Report 66. I can't do all the same plugging that he does because I don't know all of his plugs as well as he does. So I'll just, next time he's on, he does it every time. So just go listen to a different episode in which he speaks and you'll be able to get it that way as well. So thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thank you so much for supporting us through our second season of Pack-A-Day Podcast. Maggie, I know this is your first full season with us. It's been great having you on the team, part of the team, and we're just looking forward to, well, I guess we'll start with the Super Bowl. I'm looking forward to it, even though the Packers aren't in it, but we're looking forward to a great offseason. We're going to have content for you every day, and I know it's going to start ramping up here in the next probably 6 weeks, if not sooner, of just draft coverage. The draft is in April. It's really, when you think about it, it's really not that far away. And so we'll be covering all of that for you, all the free agent signings in March, all the draft coverage in March through April leading up to the draft. So stay tuned right here to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And as always, go Pack Go.